Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Friday morning, about 2:45 a.m. Eastern time. Joining us from Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado, where the Denver Nuggets had a thrilling victory over the Boston Celtics in what was surely one of the best games of the NBA season on Thursday night, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sleep Update Theater, because I'm sure we'll get plenty today.
The get-up planning pre-production meeting is in about 3 hours.
Oh.
I will be an active participant.
So I'll be headed for my flight home.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where about 9 hours ago he watched the Mavericks defeat the Miami Heat. And Luka, I believe, had his fifth consecutive 30-point triple-double, which is some crazy streak that because the Mavericks are losing, I don't think is getting the proper attention, and it won't get it in this podcast either. Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Wendy, I'll let you know that while you're hard at work in that get-up meeting, I will be just snoozing away, baby.
Yeah.
You've earned it.
Well, anyway, the Nuggets earned a real high quality win in a game that lived up to the billing. Both sides, you know, fully healthy, at least in terms of active list. Both sides rested, both sides caring about the game, going after it, everything you could want. And Bontemps, if this was a playoff series and this was game one, and the Nuggets were ahead 1-0 after their, what was it, a 4-point win? Is that what they ended up with?
Six. Do we want to say they're up 2-0 after the first two games?
That's what I was going to say. They'd be up 2-0.
That's how I would call it, personally.
Yeah, I guess so. I like 1-0 better because this game was, you know, just happened.
Arbitrary endpoints.
Yeah, I like 1-0 better. I'm sticking with 1-0.
Sure. It's your pod.
I would watch this and say this thing's going 6 or 7. I would, of course, favor the Nuggets because they are 2-0 against the regular season. They did win this game. They looked very hard to stop under pressure situations. But I felt that this is a pretty evenly matched situation. And I think that the Celtics, there was a ball in the air inside 2 minutes. It was Jason Tatum who shot it. And I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about Tatum here in a second, Bontemps. But there was a ball in the air that would have put the Celtics ahead inside 2 minutes.
And, inside 1 minute. 45 seconds to go.
Was it 45?
45 seconds.
Yeah. Right inside 1 minute. And considering the Celtics didn't play their best game at all, the fact that there was that shot was in the air, you know, illustrates why I think this will be a great series. And it certainly was the type of game that exactly is what you're looking for in a playoff series as well. So Bontemps, you were in the building where there was actually quite a few Celtics fans. What was your takeaway from what you watched in this game a couple hours ago?
Well, let's start with that part because Michael Malone got to trot out the same line he got to use about the Lakers and say,
"So the victor goes spoils.
The Celtics fans could take that L home, baby," which got into my story. Look, this was, I think, in a lot of ways, this game was a repeat in virtually every way of the first game in Boston. Incredibly high intensity game, incredibly well played game on both sides. Everybody's playing really hard, playing a ton of minutes. All the stars are playing. Everybody's healthy, invested, etc. And Nikola Jokic was sensational in both games. First game, he had 34, 12, and 9. That was coming off of the death of Deki before that. Obviously, very emotional game for him. Tonight, he has a 32-point triple-double, hits Aaron Gordon on a lob for the game-winning, or game-sealing, I should say, play with 19 seconds to go after Tatum, who had a horrific game, which we will talk about plenty, missed an absolutely wide-open corner three that he had plenty of time to test the wind on the prior possession that had a chance to put Boston ahead with 45 seconds to go. But I agree with you. I hope this is the NBA Finals. I think these are the two best teams in the league. I think it would be an unbelievable series, and we've seen these two games have been fantastic, and there's all sorts of things we'll get into from a tactical perspective that I think over the course of seven games would be awesome. But to me, the brass tacks of this are, in the two games these teams have played, Nikola Jokic has been awesome and Jason Tatum has been close to awful. And in this game in particular, he was awful. And if the Celtics are going to win this series, if it happens, Nikola Jokic is going to be the best player. That's already a hill that you're going to have to climb. Jason Tatum cannot be bad in these games. He's got to be really good. And he has been very bad. He was very bad today. He was not very good in the first one. And again, if you're the Celtics, you want to say, hey, we shot 30% on threes in the two games. Tatum was bad in the two games. We didn't play well really in either game, and we were right there in both of them. Yeah, that's true. But Denver, as Tatum, I thought, summed up very nicely after the game, is a team that does not ever beat itself. Mm-hmm. And for a Celtics team that, as we've all seen in the playoffs, likes to make life difficult for itself all the time, if they do that against this team, they ain't beating this team, because this team will kill them on it every single time.
Yeah, and look, you're not going to blow the Nuggets out. You're going to have to beat them down the stretch. And, you know, you wrote about it again today, or yesterday now. We've talked about it many times. The Celtics, statistically, are one of the best teams of all time, but you just have a really hard time trusting them to close out elite competition. And this adds to that. Whereas Joker, like, you dump the ball down to him in crunch time and you believe he's going to make a play, whether that's spinning for a tough little hook over Porzingis, or I think at the very next possession, going into what looks like a jump hook, and nope, it's that little lob to Gordon that he loves to do, and has done it in a couple of dagger situations here just over the last week. And look, people don't like when we say that Tatum is a second-tier superstar, but this is the kind of game that just makes that an obvious statement. A first-tier superstar is a two-time MVP, a finals MVP, who has a 32-point triple-double where he shoots 11 of 19 from the floor. Tatum, it was an off game. Man, you can't have a five-bucket, five-turnover dud like that in big games. And honestly, dude, like, you don't see SGA or Luka or Giannis have these just non-impactful 12- or 13-point games ever. There are levels to superstars, and Tatum is on the second level in the league. That doesn't mean the Celtics can't win a championship, but that is going to be a challenge.
Boy, there was a play in the fourth quarter with about 4 or 5 minutes to go in this game that really spoke to a lot of things, in my opinion. It wasn't the game-defining play by any means, but Tatum was obviously having difficulty getting any sort of rhythm. He had driven to the basket a little bit early in the fourth quarter, but had not gotten to the line.
Was actively avoiding contact in the paint, was trying these circus layups, like these up and under crazy things that had no chance of going in, instead of going through people, like, frankly, Jaylen Brown was, who, by the way, in this game had 41 points and was awesome. That was one of the best games Jaylen Brown's ever played.
I agree. We'll talk about Jaylen in a second. But there was this moment, the Celtics were making a run. They had cut the lead at that point, I believe, to 7. And Tatum made a good defensive play. He stepped in front of a pass and got an interception, and it created a 2-on-1 break. And Drew Holiday was on the break with him. I can't remember the Denver player who was back.
Jamal was in the middle of him. Jamal Murray.
Okay, so a guard. And Tatum was on the move after the steal and gave the ball up through a bounce pass, like, from the top of the key to Drew Holiday. And, like, just didn't want it. Like,
almost from half court.
Was it half court?
I mean, it was a little bit over half court, but he was far out.
He just gave the ball up on a 2-on-1 break to Drew Holiday, not Jaylen Brown, not Porzingis. Like, gave the ball up to the smaller player and said, here, you take it. And Holiday was, in my view, stunned and, like, fumbled the ball and, like, didn't get up a clean shot. And the fact that Tatum would not just want that and go try to say, go ahead and try to stop me. I'm 6'9". Not only am I going to score here, I'm going to dunk, and you might foul me. I don't know. I don't want to overthink it, but just the fact that he did that just was a complete illustration of his mindset. He didn't want it. And it set was really starkly against Jaylen Brown, who very, very clearly felt this game was hugely important. And right out of the gates and throughout the game, especially in the second and third quarters when the Celtics were really floundering, really couldn't get much going offensively, just was fierce in his aggression and forcing it. Now,
and one thing really quick, just to back up on that, Tuesday night, I'm in Cleveland. They have this collapse and lose, disastrous loss.
And it's a rough everybody, five quarters.
I mean, disastrous loss. They,
I'm just saying, no. I don't mean it was like a, it was an awful loss to blow a 22-point lead in 9 minutes. That's all.
Right.
That's
your point is no way they should have lost the game.
Yeah, that's all I meant by disastrous. There was a disastrous 9 minutes. They lose the game. That's all. It was ugly. They lose. Everybody was kind of like, ah, you know, it's a game, whatever. Jaylen Brown goes in the press conference and in the press conference room is like, look, this is not a game to be forgotten about. We are trying to win a championship. Mm-hmm. These are the games. We can't be making these kind of mistakes. This guy had a lower back strain of some sort. I mean, it was a long word that I said a couple times on TV today, and I honestly can't remember now because my brain is fried. But he had a lower back strain. Wasn't sure he was going to play. And he just is able to play and backs up everything he said with a big time game. And I just want to make sure that part was said, because he said a lot of stuff after that game about how they needed to respond. And he responded in a really big way on a big stage.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Well, and going back to Cleveland, obviously they blow the lead, terrible down the stretch, and it comes down to the ball's in Jason Tatum's hands. Okay, MVP candidate, deliver, and he jacks up a crap shot. Just a ugly, contested, soft fadeaway. Kicked his leg out.
He kicked his leg out to get a foul, which he got for about 2 minutes, and they overturned.
Yeah, got it until they looked at the review. They're like, oh, yeah, that was awful. And he got hammered pretty hard, not by the defender, by, you know, media, fans, et cetera, et cetera. There was a whole lot of spotlight on Jason Tatum's clutch woes. And, I mean, those numbers are not pretty. Like, he's literally among stars, one of, if not the worst clutch player in the league this season. I wonder if all that had any kind of carryover going into this game, because this is like it's very shocking to see a superstar come up this small in a game like this.
Yeah, he was probably, you know, just about everybody else on the Celtics of their rotation, maybe not Al Horford. But Horford, you know, had a big task. But the rest of the Celtics players of their core group could look at you and say they really laid it on the line. They didn't have a great shooting night. Porzingis missed 14 shots, but he played a very active game. But Tatum, really, his last five quarters are rough.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rough, that fourth quarter in Cleveland, and then this game here, considering everything, it's a rough one. And he got the shot, and you know what? I mean, he's probably 45, 50% on a wide open look in the corner. He missed it, whatever. But on the heels of the way he played in the game, it was hard to see because he was open by 12 feet, if not more.
It's just an exclamation point on a really rough couple of games, really, for him, or at least close to one game, and then come back and this next game. And look, I'm not saying Jason Tatum can't lead the Celtics or be the best player on a Celtics championship team. You know, Wendy, you talked about you called it a checkered playoff history, which I think that's fair. Like, you look at the overall body of work and not nearly as efficient.
I mean, Jaylen Brown has a checkered playoff history. He's had some moments where it's really hard to defend him, but you never get the impression that Jaylen is being meek.
Right. Yeah. But at the same time, in fairness to Tatum, I want to point out that checkered playoff history includes a 46-point performance in Milwaukee in a win-or-go-home game six. It includes a 51-point performance to beat the 76ers in the game seven last year. So we have seen this guy rise to some, you know, pretty massive occasions. But, man, tough couple of nights for him this week.
Look, you said it best before. There's levels of these things, right? Jason Tatum is a fantastic player. He's one of the 10 best players on the planet. He's not one of the 5 best players on the planet, in my opinion. And whether you want to debate whether he's fifth, you know, or he's not at number one, which is where the guy they played against today is. Because that guy is at the top of the mountain, as you said, is the reigning finals MVP, 2-time MVP, maybe a 3-time MVP in a month. And as you said, you get in the final 5 minutes of a close game and you have the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic pick and roll, and you have the Celtics offense, you're taking the Jokic Murray pick and roll. You're taking it every time. And that's the thing that the Celtics are going to have to overcome if they are going to win a championship, because they have, as you said earlier, their statistical resume is unbelievable. They're one of the best teams of all time in all these various categories. They have an incredibly versatile roster. All these switchable players can do all these different kinds of stuff. They've got 8 elite shooters in their rotation, all guys you have to worry about. Like, they've got a fantastic team, but they don't have that true blue MVP, top 3, top 5 player on their team that you typically see championship teams have. And when the Celtics played in the NBA Finals against Steph was better than Tatum. That was a big part of why Golden State won. And in these two games, again, it's just a reminder that if this is the matchup in June, that's a hill the Celtics are going to have to climb. And maybe Jason Tatum does climb it. Maybe they win. Maybe he outplays Jokic. Maybe he ascends. He's certainly got all the ability to do anything on the court. But as we sit here right now, if these teams play in the finals, I'm picking Denver to win because, again, these teams are very similar. And if it comes down to it, if they're similar, you're taking the better player at the end of the day. And Jokic is going to win that every time.
Because the other thing the Celtics don't have is anybody who can handle Joker. And that's
nobody
with all
does.
Due respect to Porzingis, who obviously has had a great defensive year. Porzingis can't stop Joker. Anthony Davis can't stop Joker. There's nobody on earth who can stop this guy.
We haven't found the person yet. Right.
Right. So there was some wrinkles in this game. I'm sure that not everything in the playbook or the ingenuity concepts were rolled out because it is a regular season game, but there was some things that were shown strategy wise in the game, specifically against Jokic. The Celtics, of course, you know, used a blend of maneuvers against him, but late in the game, Joe Mazzulla went with Drew Holiday guarding him straight up.
Against Giannis, which he's done against Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Some other guys like that.
They did several different things. They left, the guy who was on him in one-on-one. It was Holiday for a good section of the fourth quarter. They also went with Porzingis. They also went with a double big lineup a little bit during the game with Horford and Porzingis in the game. They played them straight up, and they also brought double teams. And they actually had some mild success bringing double teams, able to get some stops. Jokic did miss a couple of shots. So that's interesting, food for thought. Also, for a while, the Nuggets left Jokic on Drew Holiday at the other end of the court. And there was a bit of a, there was a stretch there as the Celtics were chopping the lead down where this, I do think Mazzulla's alignments in terms of matchups actually swayed some things in the favor of the Celtics. Holiday hit a couple of shots with Jokic sort of out on an island. There was a little bit of offense defense played by Michael Malone because he was a little bit uncomfortable with the matchups. He was moving Jokic around. So there was some showing of some hands, not that, again, not that there was anything radical that the Celtics hadn't done. But a huge factor when, you know, it's easy just to say, oh, Jokic is hard to guard, but a huge factor on this, and this has been, if you've watched any Nuggets game this year over the last few years, but particularly this year, people talk about the Jamal Murray pick and roll. And of course, it's devastating. And the way they use Spain pick and rolls where they have multiple screens set for Jokic and, you know, gives them all kinds of different options at the top of the key. But the guy you got a game plan for, I really do believe, is Aaron Gordon. And Aaron Gordon's ability to come on the weak side and be basically a safety valve for Jokic is just an incredible weapon. And several different times in this fourth quarter, in a including in a vital moment where the Celtics needed a stop, and Porzingis was all over Jokic. Jokic did two different spin moves on the same play, which Porzingis, who is challenged guarding Jokic because he can get bullied. He, you know, Jokic can basically just dribble through him. He was kind of all over him.
And Jokic did a great job. He did a great job on that play.
Yeah, Jokic throws a hook pass. And Aaron Gordon had two dunks in the final 5 minutes, one of which was on this play where he just comes from the weak side and dunks it. The other was on a putback where, again, Porzingis, I believe, did a great job forcing a Jokic miss. In both situations, the Celtics brought double teams to try to get to interfere with the guy who shoots 65, 70% from putting the ball in the basket. And in both situations, Gordon murdered him. And in both situations, Tatum is standing there and he's in the wrong position. Now,
just like he was, by the way, standing there with 19 seconds to go on Tuesday and watch Dean Wade run right to the rim and be able to put back dunk in what turned out to be the game winning play on Tuesday.
Yeah. Now, look, it's easy for me to say Tatum's got to be there on Aaron Gordon. You'd be leaving another guy open on the backside. The Nuggets shot terribly from 3-point range in this game. They were 4-21. And if he goes and sells out on Gordon, Jokic could just as easily have hit like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Michael Porter Jr. in the corner.
Right.
You're not going to fool Joker. He's going to make the right read.
I know, but I really do think that just in general, Gordon is such a killer. You might have to sell out to stop that, to stop those lobs, because
well, what you need to do is not have your low man falling asleep watching him go by you. Like, that's the thing. You have to get a body on him and not let him cut to the brim for a dunk. That's what you have to do, which requires you to be locked in a way that Tatum wasn't. And just in general, to Tim's point about making the right decisions, points off turnovers in this game, Denver 16, Celtics had a lot of live ball turnovers, Boston 6. It was a 6-point game. Like, there were some missed free throws and other stuff, but that,
yeah, the
right,
Celtics
there
missed 9 free throws. Jaylen Brown got to the line 14 times, but missed 7 of them, his most misses in a game in his career. That's obviously not great. You know, if you're the Celtics, you're looking at that going, what happened there? But again, if you're the Nuggets, you're looking at it going, well, we're not going to shoot 4-21 from three. But I don't know. They're going to well before it even is the potential matchup with the Celtics, teams are going to have to probably just say, we can't let Aaron Gordon beat us. And if that means Jamal Murray does it, if that means Caldwell Pope or Porter do it, Gordon is just too good. In fact, Jokic said on that play, that that double pirouette that he did, he didn't even really see where Gordon was. He just knows what side of the rim Gordon's on, and he knows where to put it, and he just throws it up there and just assumes he's going to be there.
Well, it helps that Gordon's a former – did he actually win a dunk contest? No, he got robbed.
No, he didn't. Whatever. He twice kind of got –
he's a freaking acrobat who like Joker usually puts it on the money, but you just kind of got to put it in the neighborhood for the guy.
He's amazing.
Joker has 102 assists this year to Aaron Gordon. To Aaron Gordon, he has 102.
God, I don't know assists. The numbers, but 75 of them got to be for dunks.
Well, again, this all comes back to the Nuggets. You know, Tatum, I thought, sums it up perfectly. The Nuggets just do not beat themselves. And if you don't block out that cut from Aaron Gordon, he's going to get a dunk. If you double at the wrong time, like Jaylen Brown tried to come over and get the ball from Jokic, he just picked it up over his head and picked it right out to the corner to KCP, who he ran off of, and he had a wide open three. Like if you make any mistake against them, you're going to get killed.
Put
every
so much
single
stress,
time.
So much stress on you. So much stress on you.
You can play it perfectly. You don't give up the cut. You stay on the shooter, and you have a 7'3" guy perfectly positioned, and Joker can still drop in that hook.
Still score anyway.
Like Joker, he's a 60%.
He could have made that hook
tough shot.
Passed it. I know. He shoots straight up in the air too. You're right.
He has the best touch in the league. He has the best paint touch in the league, and it's not close.
And his there's several amazing things about him. One of which is, you know, he's a bull who like never seems to get tired. He never seems to get hurt, knock on wood. Like he never seems to ever come close to choking. I'm sure if people who have the deeper catalog of Jokic moments than I do could probably say, well, there was this one or two times, but it doesn't even look like his pulse quickens. He just is just cold hearted about it all. So, and his attitude and mood is always exactly the same. I mean, the most energy he shows is getting mad at officials. And a lot of times when he gets mad at officials, which he's guilty of kind of sometimes being out of plays because he's, you know, looking like Luka, most of the time he's right. You know, like this guy.
He is, but he also complains a lot. And the technical he got in this game actually was a huge play in the game because he was screaming at Tony Brothers the entire way down the court. Tony Brothers waited to call a technical to see what happened on the fast break. Jaylen Brown got fouled on an and one. He then calls the technical on Jokic, which Jokic, he probably got fouled at the other end. I never saw a replay, he certainly earned the technical on top of it. And that became a 4-point play, and the Celtics went from looking kind of dead in the water to being back in the game, help spur a rally to get them back into it, which if the Celtics had gone on to win this game, that would have been one of the defining moments of the game, frankly.
Jokic is forever always hacked up on his arms. You always see, in like every game, you see red scratches all over his arms. It's good for pleading your case. Also, a factor in this game that I think would be interesting to watch play out in a long playoff series is the bench play. Neither of these teams have what you would determine as a deep bench.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of unproven, especially at the highest levels, on their benches. And Denver got way better overall bench play in this game, particularly from Peyton Watson, who was just an energy machine. He hit 5 shots, was just very active also on the boards. But they outscored the Celtics bench, I think. Let me see the actual number. It was something like 30-12 or something like that.
28-10. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that would necessarily repeat itself in every single game in a series. But that was something that we would definitely be watching over 4 or 5, 6 games. And that was something that was heavily in the Nuggets' favor.
Are either of these teams going to play 8 guys if they get to the finals?
No.
Well, Malone played 10.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He's probably not playing Zeke Nagy. Yeah.
Reggie Jackson, who Malone called out before the game and needed to play better, was bad. Zeke Nagy played a few minutes and was fine, but he will not be playing in the playoffs. So it's really Peyton Watson, who played very well, Christian Brown, who played very well, and that's about it. I think, as far as bench players are going to be playing in the finals.
Well, Justin Holiday will probably play.
I do not. I will bet money that he's not. I think that would be very bad if he's playing in the
Who's
finals
playing
for
instead?
Them.
DeAndre Jordan?
Peyton Watson and Peyton Watson and Christian Brown are going to play.
You know who's playing instead? Kontavious Caldwell-Pope.
Yes.
Jamal Murray.
Yes.
Nikola
yes.
Jokic. Michael
I think
Jordan,
they'll be playing. Wow. I think they'll be playing those seven guys, and maybe Reggie Jackson plays a little bit if he's playing well.
You know my Pat Riley-ism in
yes,
the playoff series, which is you play eight and trust seven, and by the later games of a playoff series, you sometimes play seven and trust four.
And for Boston, they're going to be playing their five guys, Al Horford and Sam Hauser, who is a big guy who can guard, a big wing who can guard a little bit and is a lights-out shooter and he got a couple threes today. And then we'll see if Peyton Pritchard can play a little or if they mix in another big here or there. They tried Xavier Tillman today for a different look. That did not go well at all.
Tillman had a couple of good games his first few games with the Celtics. I understand why he was in that rotation.
Well, I mean, Joe Mazzulla is trying different stuff all the time. Even today, they were changing up their rotations all the time. On Tuesday against Cleveland, he had Holiday guarding Isaac Okoro. Like, they spent all season tweaking things and trying things and testing things out for the playoffs because that's how they operate. And they did the same thing today. Just, I don't think Xavier Tillman's going to be playing in the finals if it comes to it either.
I also think in a series between these two teams that the variance on Porzingis will be huge because Porzingis, he has games where his three-point shot is more of a factor than not. The way the Nuggets are playing, he's going to be able to get threes.
He's played well in both games, too. Didn't hit a ton of shots. I mean, he went 3-for-10 from three today, but he played well in this game, and he was really good in the first game.
And if he takes 10 threes in five games, there's going to be games where he makes six. And he really got a lot of looks. But that's one thing that I think Boston can take away from, that they really can put the Nuggets in some rough situations because Jokic is limited in how much ground he can cover defensively, and Porzingis did definitely cause them some headaches. There were a couple of times where, well, first off, he hit 2 3-pointers right out of the gate in the third quarter. Michael Malone called a Popovich timeout less than a minute into the second half. There were a couple of other times after he called that timeout where Porzingis got open on threes. And they were at the Nuggets end of the court. And so, I mean, Malone was fully into this game. He was turned up to 10. He was up and down the sidelines going crazy, screaming, running back to his bench to have them check replays. Like he was, and Porzingis got open for threes and Malone slapped his head as the ball went up and they missed. He didn't hit a bunch of them. But,
well, and it is worth pointing out again, the Celtics are easily the best shooting team in the league, highest volume shooting team from three, highest makes, highest attempts, fourth in percentage. I think they're 41-4 when they shoot over 33% from three this season. And one of those losses was the game Tuesday that they're up 22 with nine to go. And in the two games against Denver, they've shot 30%. And they've, like both games, they've missed a good amount of open shots. And obviously, you know, if you're going to shoot that many threes, you're going to have some variance. But if they'd shot 37% in the two games, even with Tatum playing bad, they're probably 2-0 in the games, and we're looking at it differently.
I also go ahead.
Man. I was going to say one thing on Porzingis threes. How do you think your legs feel when you're wrestling with Joker?
I agree. You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's
no question.
When you have to work that hard on defense, it makes shooting the ball a lot more difficult.
I also do wonder if they're going to have to play more of Horford and Porzingis, and they will in the playoffs by default because they'll be playing more. I do wonder if you need to have the two of them together out there, maybe against this closing lineup. I mean, you've talked a lot, Brian, from the beginning of this Denver run about how big they are across the board, and they might need Horford out there for his size just to lean on Jokic and allow Porzingis to maybe back as a roamer to help on those lobs and other things, or try some stuff like that to see if that can work. Because, I mean, as you said, Big Man, I think Porzingis played pretty well defensively, and every time Jokic got him on his hip, he was able to basically just work it down to the block and, you know, either lob it up to somebody or have a pretty close shot at the rim.
And I understand we're really going into this one like we normally wouldn't go into on a regular season game, just because we can all sense what this means and how important it is. I do think the Celtics hunted mismatches a little bit too much. I know that this is a because of their ability to shoot threes and, you know, create situations, that this is something that they do regularly. I do think, especially in the second half, they went through some periods where they really weren't scoring and they were really hunting the mismatches on the screens where they got switches and not moving the ball. And the ball movement generates threes. So in this game, they take 38 threes, which is not bad, but they're better off when they're up mid 40s into the 50s and threes. I'm not saying they needed to take 10 more, but I do think there was some possessions. And part of it was because Jaylen Brown had it going so much that they were kind of leaning into that. And part of it was because some of the decisions that Denver made on, you know, who they were switching. But I think also if we were going into a game two, that would be one of the things we'd be talking about in between, would be, do they need to look for more ball movement as opposed to just hunting that size? But it's an easy trap to fall into when you've got a guy like Porzingis who, you know, a lot of times is in the post and has 8 inches on the guy who switched on.
And the crazy thing is, I haven't looked at Porzingis' post-up numbers in the last few days, but it's like a 1.4 points
per possession
efficiency. And
which is why they're going to it, I know.
Yeah, this is the same Kristaps Porzingis who, remember the famous Rick Carlisle rant, the post-up's not a good play anymore. It's not a good play for a 7'3" guy. Yeah. At the time, he was averaging 0.54 points per post-up. And it's confidence. I think it's probably getting, you know, rhythm and his legs under him and all that kind of stuff. But it's amazing how a guy who wanted to post up and the Mavericks were like, hell no, and they have numbers to back it up, is now just unbelievably efficient in those situations.
And by the way, it's why the Celtics traded for him. It's for matchups like this, because they saw time and again that Tatum and Brown would get into these isolations and struggle. And they sort of became a one route team, to use a soccer term. They would sort of just play one way, and this gives them a totally different dimension. And it's been a big part of why they've had so much success and why Porzingis has fit in so seamlessly and why they feel like they've got a chance to go farther and do more this year than they have in the past.
Yeah. So I don't know if we've probably pretty much exhausted it at this point, but,
I sure hope we get some more of those in the spring. That would be pretty great.
I don't know how you're beating Jokic 4 times. The Nuggets have demonstrated this season that they are not the same execution level team on the road than they are at home. And it's fair to point out that right now the Celtics have a 6-game lead over the Nuggets. It's effectively a 5-game lead because a tie would go towards the Nuggets at this point. It is fair to point out that home court would potentially be some equalizing factor.
But what's the Celtics' home record?
A lot and two, but I know.
29-3. What was the first one of those three?
Yeah, I know.
Listen,
Joker don't give a damn about going on the road in the playoffs.
No, if you're Boston, if you potentially have a game 7 at home, it's going to feel a lot different.
I know,
if you're in Denver.
If I'm trying to create a case on how you can beat them 4 times.
Yeah, you got to have home court advantage. Yeah, no, for sure.
Listen,
that's what I'm saying.
Can we also just mention the 5280 jerseys are hideous.
They are really bad.
I mean,
by the way, Wob, to your point, Worldwide Wob, our buddy, Rob Perez, tweeted this earlier. This is probably the biggest game of the season, and we have both teams wearing these ridiculous city jerseys, and we have the Celtics wearing a white jersey on the road and not their traditional jerseys, which are like one of the 2 or 3 best jerseys in the whole league. Enough with these city jerseys.
Well, the Celtics don't get to choose. They have to react to what Denver is playing.
Whatever. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous situation.
Well, they need to burn the 5280 jerseys.
Ugh, they're so bad. The Nuggets have a lot of cool jerseys too. Those ones are not, though.
Yeah, I in this particular game, you don't need the mile high at that center court. You don't need a gimmick in a game like this, you know?
No.
But anyway, it's a fair point. There was actually some pretty remarkable basketball played
all over the place
Thursday night. There was a game-winning steal dunk by Domantas Sabonis in Sacramento.
With the reigning Cojones Factor Player of the Year fouled out.
Well, and with Victor Wembanyama not playing, they were down, yeah, what, five? With it? No, but I mean, they were down five at home with, what, a minute to go? It looked like the game was over.
Let's not talk about how the Kings were in a situation where they needed
Sabonis. I'm just saying, I was trying to follow what was going on in those games and the one here, and I looked over. I was like, oh, man, these guys are down five. The Fox is fouled out. This thing is over.
The Kings are absolutely all over the board right now.
They really are.
Like, but that was third place. That's the bronze medal. That's the brass medal. Because is Cojones Factor Player of March over with McMahon?
I mean, Ant made one hell of a case. And like, he completely dominated the fourth quarter offensively. The one thing he did wrong was miss a free throw, and all that did was set up maybe the most spectacular play of his career. And one of the, I can think of two other blocks that I've ever seen that were that level of spectacular. Bam Adebayo on Tatum in the bubble playoffs.
Yes. Oh, right.
And LeBron's chase down block, the most famous block in NBA.
Good callback.
LeBron, I immediately thought of that. I was there for the Bam one too. That was unbelievable.
I mean, that was ridiculous. But this, I mean, dude.
Remember the Kawhi middle finger block?
Oh, yes. That's up there.
Yeah,
too.
That was good too.
That was amazing. Good too. But not as athletically unbelievable.
The athleticism on this, where it was Neesmith, I believe, right?
Yes.
Poor bastard. He's got a layup, a transition layup that would have tied it up at the buzzer. Ant sprints from the free throw line past a whole bunch of people to the rim, leaps, swats the thing with his left hand.
I don't that word doesn't cut it.
Smashes his head on the rim,
hard.
His armpit. Like, I think his armpit touched like the freaking square. He was so high.
It might have touched the foam on the bottom of the backboard.
His shoulder hit the bottom of the backboard. His head hit the rim, and his hand hit the top of the box. It was unbelievable.
So there's
and he eyed it up from the 3-point line. You could see him eyeing it up the whole time.
There's a low angle that is in slow motion, but if you watch it, even in slow motion, he's going up so fast. First off, it looks like it's manipulated video.
Yeah.
Because he jumps, and even in slow motion, it doesn't seem, your eye doesn't believe how fast. And he also jumps straight up.
Yes.
Like he had a jetpack on.
Yes, it's exactly right. It looked like there was an unseen trampoline, because there's no way.
Slam ball.
Your eye is not believing that a man that size can move that fast straight up.
A 6'4" guy hit his head on the rim while blocking a shot.
And not just like grazed it. He like might have dented it.
That means he's off the floor at least 44 inches.
Well, he must
have said it was the highest he's ever jumped, I believe.
He must have had some level of adrenaline in his system, because this leap was almost inhuman. Like, I don't know what the record is for the high jump, but, and I, you know, the U.S. track and field team may want to consider trying to recruit him. He's going to be on Team USA, but, you know, because that, and then the thing about the play is, not only does he hit his head on the rim, he then crashes headlong into the floor. He basically breaks his fall with his arm.
With his hand. It could have easily busted his wrist.
He looked like you outside the White House.
He did.
A couple years ago.
Listen, he did. That was my first thought. See somebody land on their hand like that. It's not good.
And he crashed to the ground in a fall that, like, if you weren't already gasping, I mean, you know, I gasped several times tonight. One of them was on Aaron Gordon's putback dunk where he just sort of roundhoused it. But that was like child's play compared to, and so he crashes to the ground with incredible force to the point where you're like, oh my God, he might have fractured his hip, might have broken his wrist, might have a concussion from hitting the rim. And he bounced back up to celebrate like he was made of rubber. He bounced up and was jesting around. Now, obviously, he's literally feeling no pain at that moment. And there's some fan videos. I encourage you, just for fun over the weekend, there's some videos of the fans that fans took on their phones in the arena where you can hear the native sound. Got to find them, because the reaction in the arena of what they just saw is just amazing.
And oh, by the way, he had 44 points in the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, the thing we haven't talked about is he had three straight ridiculous shots, a pull-up three off a Rudy screen, and then got in the lane twice on ridiculously hard shots, three possessions in a row to put Minnesota in a position to take over that game.
So you say ridiculously hard shots. I would say they were. I liked the shots because I thought they were rhythm shots for him, which, you know, we've talked about.
I guess
a lot
I should.
About.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they were just heavily contested and difficult shots, but yeah, he was clearly in the flow.
Yeah. They were, I thought they were difficult shots to create, but they were well created, if that makes sense.
And no, totally.
Because we have talked about, you know, kind of the Tatum thing, like the Wolves struggles to close and Ant being 22 years old, learning on the job. I thought the way he was operating, look, we haven't even mentioned Karl Anthony Towns.
Right, it was a big news day.
The torn meniscus, they know he's going to be out. I'm sure Ant knew going into that game that Cat's going to be out. Sounds like at least the rest of the regular season, they hope to get him back in the playoffs. So you've got all that going on. But I thought that he was as poised and under control while absolutely carrying the offense in crunch time as I've seen him.
Well, offense is going to need help because Towns on Monday in Portland, it was in Portland. No, it was home to Portland. Suffered a meniscus tear in his left knee. They spent 2.5 days getting imaging and consulting a whole bunch of people on what to do. And though they didn't announce this, the implication of the timeline indicates he's going to have a partial removal of the meniscus. He's going to have it snipped off, which is really the best case scenario. I mean, there are situations when you have meniscus injuries where you can play through it, but you're really risking a lot of things that way. I think the key is it's not necessarily a season-ending injury. And, you know, if you're Minnesota, what you need is you need Cat to hopefully be able to play in a series against the Nuggets. And this leaves that door open. The thing about this is first off, there's that game against the Pacers on Thursday was the first of a 6-game road trip. So it's never good to lose an all-star, but now you're losing him for the last month of the season and you're losing him at the start of a 6-game trip. The second thing is Denver is right on their heels. They're a game behind them and they've got 3 games with Nuggets left. So the Nuggets are sitting there holding a golden opportunity to not only walk the Wolves down, but also grab the tiebreaker and what they can really put them in a bad spot in a potential series. So that's just a bummer. And where this is going to hit the Wolves, I believe, is just with the scoring, because Towns is, you know, he's averaging 22 points a game.
Their offense was already a question, right?
Yes. And so what they did in the first game, and I think their plan going forward is to start Kyle Anderson, and they have him and Jaden McDaniels as sort of their two forwards that they can move around. And, you know, when you have Carl, you're going to have to play a little slower. Kyle Anderson is a guy who can bring the ball up the court, there is some window there. There's some things you can do that Towns can't do, but all you need to know about it is they signed TJ Warren. Well, I thought his career might be over. They signed TJ Warren to a 10-day contract and played him 17 minutes I think it was 16 minutes within a day of signing him. And that just tells you all you need to know. They are equipped with a terrific backup big man in Naz Reid, who is one of the best backup big men in the league. And so they still have that ability to go big. They still can align in those three upcoming games against the Nuggets. They still can go big, but their replacement challenge, Bontemps, is somehow finding the offense that they're losing with Towns.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've talked all year about how big a year this is for Minnesota and all the questions they have ahead of them, and it sucks that they have to deal with this now. That being said, it does seem like, you know, as Adrian's reported, as we've all talked about, it seems like there's a decent chance that he'll be back by the start of the playoffs, which, by the way, this is a quirky thing, but because of how late the regular season started this year, the playoffs aren't even starting, if you're one of the top six teams, until April 20th. Which normally they'd be the whole week earlier, which in this case might be a huge difference, because that could be the difference between coming back, say, game five or six of a first round series, or maybe the start of a first round series. It could end
and
up
look,
being a,
maybe
a
he doesn't
thing for
even
that.
The first round. I mean, look, everything in the West is going to be hard, but if the Timberwolves have a top couple seed, they may just have to try to gut it through a first round without him.
I mean, yeah, they only have to play like the Lakers or the Mavericks or the Suns or the Warriors.
Or the Warriors. Right. Or
they may slide.
Pelicans.
They may slide to three or four and may not even get one of those teams. They may get the Pelicans. Yeah.
They may get the Pelicans. But yeah, so like it is going to be, I thought it was interesting. They started Kyle Anderson. You know, I wondered if they would start Naz Reid, but I think having him as a scoring option off the bench makes sense, because he is a really good offensive big, and that does allow them to balance things out a little bit. And if you have Kyle Anderson out there, a really smart, heady guy who can handle the ball, like, you're also really long too. Then you got him and McDaniels on the wings. Ant's a really good defender. That's a hell of a defensive lineup. Like, you might have some trouble scoring, but you know, they also were in a game with the Pacers, who we've talked about their offense all year, and that was a 113-111 game,
right? Absolutely.
Which for Indiana is like scoring 90. So, you know, that's, I think if you're Chris Finch, that's probably the best way to play it, to try to grind out wins with Rudy Gobert in your defense and let Ant be your closer.
Yeah,
and
tonight, Gobert played 40
good.
minutes in this game, and I would assume that's going to be a more regular thing.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to mention Gobert playing 40 minutes. He averages a little bit under 34. He's going to have to play heavy minutes. You know, you call Naz Reid one of the best bench bigs in the league. The reality is his role has been, he's a power forward. When he's playing with Cat bumps to the five. Obviously, when he's playing with Gobert bumps to the five. He's going to have to play whatever backup center minutes there are. But, you know, they're going to have to rely heavily, even more heavily, on Gobert. And, you know, it wasn't 44 points with maybe the most spectacular game ceiling block I've ever seen in my life. But Gobert was huge today too. 18 points, 14 rebounds, a few blocks, a couple of steals. They're going to need the best of Gobert if they're going to have any hope of hanging on to the one seed here.
The other thing is, for entertainment purposes only, you may want to lean into Ant totals, because he took 35 shots.
And by the way, he's going to need to do that.
I agree.
Because
he may have McVance, he may
to
have
McVance
more.
Point, like, he can create shots on anybody, and they just aren't going to have a lot of shot creators. And by the way, you alluded to it a little bit. They have to play a back-to-back tomorrow in Cleveland. Then they go to L.A. from Cleveland, which is a heck of a road trip, to play the Lakers and Clippers on Sunday and Tuesday. They then have a couple games with the Jazz, and then they play at home against Denver, Cleveland, and Golden State. So that is a pretty
They're
pivotal
take some
couple of weeks. Well, maybe, but that, like, if they could survive those couple of weeks, that could put them in decent shape to maybe survive this thing, because their schedule the last few games of the season gets a little lighter for them.
Well, I like their odds in those Utah games. The Jazz right now are number 10 in the lottery odds, and a top 10 protected pick this year to OKC. Boy, I wonder how that one's going to play out.
Yeah, I got a good feel about how the Jazz are going to finish, just like they did last year. to keep that pick. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right, before we go, before the sun comes up, I do think we should talk quickly about the Bulls, who are in a very unlikely and unexpected little late season renaissance here. They've pulled off a number of victories. They've gone 3-0 on the first three games of this four-game road trip that they're on, coming back from 20 down in Sacramento. You know, like I said, buy a ticket and buckle in whenever Sacramento's playing right now.
Seriously.
And the Bulls, by the way, the Bulls, I think are in the most, I think the Bulls have played the most clutch games of any team in the league. Every game they're in is a 5-point game, it seems like.
Well, that the other team is who's like that is Golden State, who, big surprise. Like, that's the other thing. I guess the Kings have blown the most 20-point leads and have the most 20-point comebacks, second only to the Bulls, or the Bulls are second. So I guess it's not a surprise that in that game it was a 20-point comeback. And I guess it's not a surprise that when the Bulls play the Warriors, two teams, all they do is play clutch games. It comes down to the clutch. The Bulls pull the win off in Golden State. Golden State had been, you know, other than the bomb that they dropped in Boston over the weekend, had been really, really good. And DeMar DeRozan has been, you know, he's trying to get that cojones factor.
I was going to say, when you asked me about Ant, I thought about DeRozan. He has, I just looked, he had 9 points in the fourth quarter tonight, and that includes 2 go-ahead buckets in the last minute, including the and one that put him up for good. In the last 3 fourth quarters, I believe he has a total of 45 points.
Oh, my God.
45 points in three quarters of three wins of the comeback variety is pretty impressive.
Pretty good.
The big news, unfortunately, for this game for the Warriors is Steph Curry sprained his ankle in the fourth quarter. Curry wears moon boots under those shoes to protect his ankles. I'll never forget the first time I saw, you know, you see the ankle protectors above, but you, I don't even know how he gets that thing into those shoes. He should be wearing like LeBron style shoes. You know, LeBron wears these, well, he doesn't so much anymore, but in the middle of his career, he used to wear these clodhoppers. I don't know how Steph gets those things into the shoe, because the shoe doesn't look that big. He's got a lot of protection on his ankle. He's like those offensive linemen who every offensive lineman wears knee braces on both knees to try to knock down the number of knee injuries that they have, because they're constantly getting fallen into. Steph, every single day of his life for a decade now, has taken steps to protect his ankles. That said, he did turn it. You can't do anything about an ankle turn in the NBA. It happens. The Warriors are in a fight to try to climb out of the 9-10. And I really liked their chances of doing that because their schedule was most favorable amongst all those teams. But you can't account for injuries. And now I don't know if Steph's going to miss some time, but to lose Steph and to lose a game to a sub 500 team at home that you're expecting to win, not the best night for the Warriors.
Yeah, plus the Mavs won to give them just a little bit of breathing room.
And the Kings won.
The Kings are now in seven and a half games back of first. Mavs eighth, 9 games back, and then the Warriors and Lakers are both 10.5 games back, so tied for ninth. The Mavs and Warriors do have 3 games left against each other.
Right.
One of those was the game that was postponed because of Deke's death. But they have 3 games left against each other, and needless to say, those are going to be huge. Whatever injury news that comes out on Steph is going to be huge. Boy, the Mavericks, they got a win they desperately needed tonight because things had not been going well. You know, it's crazy. Luka's got 4 straight 35-point triple-doubles, never been done in NBA history. And they just snapped a 3-game losing streak in the fourth one. It's insane. But they
got a really nice comeback win, right? Weren't they behind in that game?
Yeah, and they still are the worst defensive team in the league since the All-Star break statistically. They've made some lineup changes. They put Daniel Gafford in the starting lineup, bringing Derek Lively off the bench, and then also Derek Jones Jr. for Josh Green. And they proceeded to give up 29 points in the first 7 minutes and fall down by 15. Now, from that point on, not to damn with faint praise, but they did play by far their best defense since the All-Star break. They held the Heat to 25 or under in each of the last 3 quarters. And then, you know, Luka just did Luka stuff, and Lively came in and played really well in the fourth quarter and helped them close. Dante Exum was huge closing. He's been a guy who missed most of 2 months and is coming back. Anyways, it's going to be, I think, from 7 to 10, but I think really Mavs, Lakers, Warriors, how that's going to end up playing out is going to be awfully interesting. The Mavericks do have the tiebreaker over the Lakers.
Well, look, I looked up the projections just now just to see where they're at. We're talking about how thin all the margins are on these things. The Thunder and Wolves are both projected to win 56 games. The Nuggets are projected to win 55 games. The Kings are projected to win 47 and be sixth. The Mavs and Suns are projected to win 46 and be tied for 7th and 8th. The Warriors are at 45 and 9th, and the Lakers are at 44 and 10th. And I can tell you, every day as there's a weird game, like the Bulls beating the Warriors, that shifts by a game one way or the other every day, up and down the standings. And that's the kind of thing we're looking at for the next 6 weeks.
The Spurs had the ball with the chance to take the last shot and ended up losing in regulation in Sacramento.
If Sacramento loses that game, they're right now projected, I think, to finish 9th instead of projected to finish 6th. That's what we're talking about. And that could be how close the margins are 6 weeks from now with how this thing plays out.
Well, and the other thing is we've talked about Steph's ankle, and you know, they haven't said anything official, but it sounded like the guys in that team are anticipating that he'll be out for a little bit, hopefully not long, but we'll see.
It was a pretty rough limp going off.
And then I don't know, man, LeBron limped off. LeBron's obviously dealing with an ankle thing. I think that thing might flare up when you're down double figures around 3 minutes left. I think there might be some of that going on. But he's a guy in his 21st year who's managing things. The Mavericks, after having all kinds of injury issues throughout the course of the season, are the healthiest of that bunch.
Who's going to be most sore on Friday morning, which is now? Is it Ant or is it Steph?
Steph.
Ant's 22 years old. And by the way, he bounces
back. We mentioned this. During this game, he twice went to the locker room to get treatment for injuries.
Yes.
And just bounced back out.
Yeah, to be clear, twice went to the locker room and came back out and played almost within 3 minutes.
He turned his ankle on the first play of the game.
Yeah, in our group chat, Bontemps kept saying,
hey, Ant just left. I don't remember what the second one was. I just saw him getting...
Finally was declared, we're not going to update each other on Ant leaving the floor unless the Wolves put out an injury report.
Our buddy Chris Hyde from the Star Tribune, I was texting with him. He goes, man, this is happening at least once a week. And there's been games this year where they have said he's done for the night and he's come back and played. So, you know.
What a magnetic game. What a magnetic personality.
Listen, anytime he shows up, he might be a little bit tardy, but he is fun to watch.
Sure is.
Listen, and he's got a newborn. I'm sure the 6-game road trip is difficult, but he'll sleep. He'll sleep.
He will sleep. And with the Steph thing, like in Towns, it is just crazy. Mm-hmm. It seemed like for most of the year, we didn't really have that much injury stuff to deal with. And over the last 3 weeks or so, man, it has just been a brutal run of injuries where, you know, you'd Steph and Towns and, you know, LeBron's been dealing with this ankle thing for a while. And these different guys in the West. And then the East, I was going to say in the East, Cavs are down 3 starters. The Knicks are down 4. The Sixers are down 4. Like Chris Middleton hasn't played in a month. Like all these teams are just all dealing with massive injury crises all over the place,
which is why it was so great to see the Nuggets and Celtics play with full lineups on Thursday. All right, get up. Zoom is in 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Oh,
thanks to our producer, Adi, who's filling in for Jackson. Jackson saw what time this pod was going to be. And said,
Jackson couldn't be bothered. He had better things to do. No.
Jackson's off. Thank you, Adi. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you, Bontemps. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. We will be talking to you in about 15 minutes, I think, is our next podcast. We'll be talking to you very soon.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.